we have to draw a red line. This is how we need to continue to defend the court from interference. From interference, especially with the independence and the impartiality of the court. We cannot allow that.
It is almost two decades since the International Criminal Court was established to investigate war crimes and crimes against humanity. In this podcast, Global Insight speaks to the first two prosecutors, Luis Moreno Ocampo and Fatou Bensouda, and one of the ICC's key special advisors, Leila Sadat, about ongoing challenges as its third prosecutor, Karim Khan, settles into the role. First, Luis Moreno Ocampo, who served as the court's first prosecutor between 2003 and 2012, discusses the evolution of the ICC.
In 2003, when I took office, the issue was existence of ICC. There were many doubts about the possibility to have an operational court. When I left, ICC was established, permanent. So Fatou Bensouda was part of that process. She knew very well. And she adjusted to a new challenge. After 7 years, she had to open investigation into Palestine, in Afghanistan, including US, and in Georgia. Now affecting big countries. And that put the court in a different place. And that for me is the real, real challenge today. And normally, states control institutions like the ICC through two mechanisms, budget and administration. And in both senses, there are more budget problems today and administration. In addition to that, even President Trump went further and sanctioned Prosecutor Bensouda for doing her job. And the Trump administration treated Prosecutor Bensouda as designated as they do with terrorists and drug dealers, for doing her job, investigating torture. So, and that for me is the biggest scandal. Fatou Bensouda pushed for the most difficult cases, and her time was about, okay, the Afghanistan situation was not ready in 2014, was not ready in 2015, 17, but then was ready, and she did it. And that was probably the most difficult decision she had, because in fact caused her to be designated, imagine.
Professor Leila Sadat was appointed by Bensouda in 2012 as a special advisor to the Court on Crimes Against Humanity. Although relations between the US and the court had been hostile for some time, she says the executive order issued by the Trump administration in June 2020 marked an unprecedented escalation in tensions.
Prior to this, the rhetoric had been about the court itself. We object to the jurisdictional mechanism of the court. We, you know, the talking points even of John Bolton during the Bush administration, which had been very hostile towards the court, was we don't like the court. And the court was sort of seen as this this entity, right, this corporate entity, and we don't like this court. And therefore, we're going to adopt these bilateral immunity agreements to protect our personnel from the reach of this court. But there hadn't been personal attacks on ICC personnel. And so the Trump administration started really to personalize this with verbal threats and visa revocations. And when the executive order came out imposing, you know, declaring the ICC to be a threat to US national security and granting the president this authority to impose individual sanctions, again, we were sort of all in a little bit of a waiting period because we thought, oh, well, they wouldn't actually designate anybody. But many of us did write articles saying that this was unprecedented, that this is an instrument, you know, the institution is dedicated to international justice. It prosecutes the most serious crimes of concern to the international community as a whole. So this is an institution that not only should the United States not be threatening or designating as a terrorist or a threat to U.S. national security, but it should be supporting. They could only see one thing, and they could only see the potential for ICC intervention with respect to US persons. But I think they missed the larger picture of how the ICC really could have been useful in helping to bring some accountability for human rights abuses into the conversation about what was going on in Afghanistan before the US withdrawal. And maybe we could have avoided some of these problems, but they didn't. They really fixated on this issue of the potentiality for investigations into U.S. persons, which again is a potentiality, right? It's not necessarily a reality, but the prosecutor had asked for permission to open. And when finally the court gave permission to open, the sanctions came down like a ton of bricks on the court and then subsequently on the prosecutor and one of the other top members of her office. It was a true crisis on a personal level for them because they had to personally bear the full brunt of the wrath of the United States of America. There was no court they could go to challenge this, right? There was no due process or any kind of procedure.
Although not personally implicated by the sanctions, Sadat says they had a huge chilling effect on her and many others carrying out work in support of the ICC and international justice. It prompted two lawsuits in the US, one led by the Open Society Justice Initiative and another led by the American Civil Liberties Union, to challenge the Trump administration's executive order on the grounds that it violated the plaintiffs' constitutional rights, including their freedom of speech.
I think the broad sweep of the law, particularly as it was potentially implicating individuals like us in our teaching and our lecturing and in the way we think, right, had a huge chilling effect. It had a very concrete effect on my ability as an academic to discuss the International Criminal Court and to teach about it. And so we were very gratified when the judge in the first case actually granted a preliminary injunction, which means that the judge in the first case brought by Open Society and those plaintiffs, the judge felt they were likely to prevail actually in their case. And for that reason was willing to enjoin the application of the law to them. Unfortunately, that didn't apply to the plaintiffs in our case because the court narrowed it to just the individuals in that particular lawsuit. So we continued with our lawsuit even after their preliminary injunction. And eventually both lawsuits were settled by the Biden administration.
In April 2021, the Biden administration repealed the sanctions imposed against ICC prosecutor Fatou Bensouda and another senior official, Fokisa Motsoaloko, head of the Jurisdiction, Complementarity and Cooperation Division. Speaking shortly after sanctions were lifted, Bensouda told Global Insight that the court would continue to stand up to attacks or efforts to interfere with its work.
I am glad that this new administration under Biden has revoked those sanctions and the executive order that was made against the office. But I just want to again emphasize that notwithstanding the difficult phase that we have gone through with respect to that, those sanctions, it should not stop the office. It should not stop the court to continue to work in accordance with the statute, within our legal mandate, and to always do what is required of us under the statute. We have to draw a red line. This is how we need to continue to defend the court from interference, especially with the independence and the impartiality of the court. We cannot allow that. And for that, I really want to commend all those, everyone, including states, including civil society, all of you who have made efforts, big efforts, indeed, to ensure that this executive order is reversed and the sanctions are lifted, and that at the moment I believe what we are currently doing is to recalibrate the relationship between the ICC and the US, for instance, which I always say has to be on the basis of mutual respect and also respectful dialogue between us and the US.
Bensouda believes the ICC continues to act as a major deterrent to atrocity crimes.
What if there was no ICC? I think the world would be at a worse place than it is, and that we will see a reversion to very, very serious crimes being committed, and this will be certainly a big challenge to international criminal justice. I see the ICC as a deterrent, and I believe that we have there has been examples in which one can really say that it was the work of the ICC and the intervention of the ICC in various situations that probably did not allow for an exacerbation of the situation. Our first case against Lubanga, and also in subsequent cases, we have tried to highlight the importance of this crime against children, against a whole future generation of children that are being forced to be fighters, to commit horrendous crimes, to be taken away from their families, taken to wars that they have not formed. They don't even know what is the cause of those wars, and being made to participate in them. I believe that by highlighting that phenomenon in that case of Lubanga has also contributed. The very fact that even in situations where we are not, they are not part of the ICC, are even calling on to the ICC to intervene, I believe does show that the credibility of the institution is established, and that more and more people are looking to have the ICC's intervention and to even use it to deter would-be perpetrators from committing crimes such as this. We get communications every day in their hundreds, every year in their hundreds, of various crimes that are committed around the globe asking for ICC's intervention.
Karim Khan QC was sworn in as the ICC's third prosecutor in June 2021. Moreno Ocampo says there are numerous challenges and decisions facing the new prosecutor.
My challenge was to build a court, moving from the feeling that it could not work to make it work. Prosecutor Bensouda made the court going big forward, including on investigations against big states like Russia or U.S., And therefore, the situation that Karim Khan will receive is different. It's a court who is doing its job, but there's not so much real support. That's his challenge. He could make really important decisions, deciding where to focus. And that is, for me, his main... The test will be in the first few months. It's about that, where to go. And He has relevant experience as a lawyer in court, and I think in the last year he got relevant experience in the Syria investigations. So he understands the UN system, he understands the model. So I think that's a very important challenge for him and for the court.
Khan reappointed Sadat as a special advisor on crimes against humanity in September 2021. She says the steady rise of authoritarian governments, nationalism, and populist rhetoric pose an existential threat to the ICC, and that Khan must choose the court's priorities wisely.
I think, to my mind, when we look at the lack of state cooperation, we look that the ICC is not picking up additional ratifications at any significant pace. Basically, it's got 124 parties. It had 120 votes in Rome. You know, we're really not getting past that block that we saw. That is the biggest challenge to the court. Lots of the other stuff you can fix. States parties can give the court more money if they want them to open more investigations. You can't give them the same budget and then add 10 more situations. And so that's one thing that the former prosecutor said many, many times. And the current prosecutor has actually started closing preliminary examinations or engaging in prioritization, which I think is a completely sensible thing to do, given that he's working with essentially a zero budget. So, you know, the best the court can do really is focus on the wins, focus on the cases you can do your job. Fatou Bensouda always said that. I hear the same thing from the current prosecutor, from Karim Khan. You hear it from the president. We have a mandate. We do our work. We can't really influence the political climate in which we exist. All we can do is do our work to the highest level. And I do think that's a commitment that Prosecutor Khan is bringing to the office. And that is certainly a commitment that Prosecutor Bensouda had as well.
Sadat says the International Criminal Tribunal for the former Yugoslavia showed just how challenging it is for courts like it and the ICC to fight impunity in real time.
We don't have a Nuremberg model at the ICC. The closest model we have in terms of other ad hoc tribunals is the ICTY. And we know that the ICTY also struggled to get its most powerful accused for a long time. And it was a big criticism. And I do remember the naysayer saying, see, this is never going to work because you're never going to get arrest because S4 wouldn't arrest known war criminals if they were running around the former Yugoslavia, et cetera. And so I think we learned, well, we should have learned from the ICTY experience that when you have a court that's operating in real time, you're probably going to have to temper your ambition to get the highest ranking accused because those are the most powerful. They're in charge of the territory of the state where you would have to arrest them. And the ICC has no police force. So to the extent you have justice without police, you're going to have to probably wait some time for arrests of your most consequential accused. And so does that mean you do nothing? I think the answer, again, we can draw from the ICTY experience is you do the cases you can do. And you actually lay the foundation, you lay evidentiary foundation, you develop expertise in the particular situation under investigation, and you do the cases you can.
Bensouda urges her successor to continue to resist efforts by states to impede the court's ability to fight impunity.
It's a very critical time in which he's taking over the ICC. We all have seen that multilateralism is under threat, as never before. We've seen that. And I would urge him, together with the team, to continue to be vigilant. They must continue to be vigilant. There is progress that has been made, and we have to try not to lose that progress. There are always attempts at politicization of our work, of pressure for us to use to consider, to make political consideration in our work. There is always that attempt. And I would also urge him to continue to desist that attempt, those attempts, because it will be there. Depending on where we are, people take interest in what we do, and they always try to ensure that their own interest is what is advanced, not based on the legal mandate that we have, but maybe for other considerations that are not. So I will definitely advise him that he looks out, I'm sure he already knows that, but he looks out for it and to make sure that the office continues to desist from allowing those pressures in any way to interfere with the work that we do.